This episode is brought to you by the American Homebrewers Association, publishers of Zymergy Magazine and host of HomebrewCon, the annual family gathering of homebrewers. Visit homebrewersassociation.org and learn about the benefits of membership. homebrewersassociation.org. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, February 7th, 2019. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, homebrewer Chris McKenzie joins us again to talk about a year-long collaboration between half a dozen brewers brought together by the internet to brew the perfect stout. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows, our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear, including our tie-dye silicone pint and our brewing rainbow shirt. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram, at Basic Brewing, and find our show page on Facebook. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. If you do us the favor of rating us on iTunes and maybe leaving a nice comment, they say that that will help new listeners to find us. And if you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. And thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of fine stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter, including if you are a supporter of the podcast on Patreon or a longtime supporter on PayPal. You got an early release of Basic Brewing video on Monday. I started off the new year, the new brew year, by brewing up a little 100% rye session pale ale. And this one's more traditional than I've been doing lately with the rye beers. It's a full 60-minute boil with more traditional hopping. And it turned out to be very clear and very tasty. But for some reason, the head doesn't stick around very long. Not sure what's going on there. Maybe we hypothesize that it could have something to do with the beer being a little bit more viscous than normal. I don't know. The bubbles, they appear and they just don't want to stick around. Well carbonated, but the head just doesn't stay. It's tasty in other regards. It's only 2.1% ABV, and I figure it has around 118 calories per pint. So maybe it's a good way to start off the new year. Speaking of low-calorie beers, did you watch the Super Bowl ads? Is it cool to call out your competition for using an adjunct when you use one yourself? That's probably all I got to say about that. I finally got all those prizes sent out for our annual disaster show participants. Peter and JD were the last two, and they heard me calling them out on the last episode. So spam folders were checked and such as that. So thanks again, everybody who sent in stories and who continue to send in stories. I've already received a handful of disasters for next year. So 2019 is starting out roughly in some homebrew houses. Let's take a look into the mailbag. I've received a bunch of messages and social media comments from brewers who are trying the small batch hop sampler recipe. Nick writes in and says, "Wanted to thank you for the idea to two hop sampler beers. I got a 1-gallon mini keg for Christmas, and I've been doing some 1-gallon hop samplers to fill it up. I agree with Steve that the hops seem to taste more similar than different when you get them on their own. I've also been using amber dry malt extract for a little more malt flavor. Tastes great. Anyway, great idea. The beers are great and gives me a reason to brew a little more often." Well, thanks, Nick. Inspired by Nick, I decided to change up the next round of the Basic Brewing Hop Sampler and brew it with Vienna dry malt extract instead of the Pilsen Light dry malt extract. The wort is darker than I expected, so looking forward to seeing how that tastes. I brewed with New Zealand hops this time, Motueka, Rakau, and Nelson Sauvin. So stay tuned for that. Or is it Nelson Sauvin? I don't know. maybe Steve will know. Mark from Montreal writes, "After listening to a few hop sampler radio episodes, I've decided to try a few batches of my own with dry malt extract. It's a great way to get a good feeling for different types of hops. So far, I've tried with Nugget, Summit, and Horizon. The beer is really good and the brewing day is really short. Very cool. Walter from Basking Ridge, New Jersey writes, I'm trying my hand at my own hop sampler series. Pecco, Lemon Drop, Equinox, and Comet. Slightly different process from yours. I did a full all-grain mash, boiled just enough, around 20 minutes, to reach my target original gravity of 1060, then no chill, transferred 1.5 gallons of the boiling wort to 4 mini kegs that contained the hop charges, cooled outside overnight. Interesting. Then pitched Mangrove Jack M44 the next day. Walter says that was around 2 weeks ago. Fermentation has gone well. Looking forward to tasting it this weekend. Very cool. Let us know how it turns out. Walter, switching it up with an all-grain hop sampler with no chill. I hope everybody's having as much fun with the concept as we are. It's very cool. Our sponsor, Imperial Organic Yeast, has a message for you pro brewers out there. Planning brew schedules just got easier. Commercial orders of up to 20 liters of A38 Juice, A07 Flagship, and L13 Global are guaranteed in stock and ready to ship in 24 hours, or shipping is free. Note that Imperial will continue to ship Monday through Thursday. So you already know Imperial provides professionals and homebrewers the highest sell counts in the industry with excellent customer service and top-notch customer support. Now Imperial is helping the pros be a bit more nimble on scheduling brews. And there's something new coming out from Imperial as well. B53 Precious is the new seasonal strain from Imperial that's available through February. Listen to the description of Precious. Where would your Trappist IPA be without this strain? A low phenolic profile along with clean, bright esters make this a great strain for a hoppy Belgian-style ale. Use Precious in primary, then add some W15 Suburban Brett in secondary or in bottles to produce a crisp, complex, dry, and wild Belgian-style beer that will morph into a new creature over months of conditioning. Sounds like Orval, doesn't it? You know I love Imperial Organic Yeast. My stir plate is dusty because I don't make starters for moderate gravity beers anymore. Homebrewers, ask your local homebrew shop about Imperial. And pro brewers, head over to imperialyeast.com to find out more about quick order fulfillment of Juice, Flagship, and Globe. Or Global, rather. ImperialYeast.com. Casey at Imperial sent me some Precious and some Suburban Brett to play with. So I brewed up a 5-gallon golden ale based on a recipe from the AHA website. And if you'll remember, a little while back, the Homebrewers Association posted clone recipes from a commercial beer in each state. In Arkansas, it was Ozark Beer Company's Belgian Golden Ale, which they used to have in cans, but they don't anymore. So I took that recipe and modified it a little bit. I mashed it at 148 degrees Fahrenheit or 64 C for 90 minutes because I wanted the wort to be very fermentable because I plan on pitching the brat either in the secondary or maybe in the bottle. And, you know, I don't want a lot of residual sugars left in the beer. I read an article by mad fermentationist Mike Tonsmeyer on dosing beer at bottling with Brett. And I believe he used 10 drops per bottle, something like that. So I just picture Tonsmeyer in his kitchen with a little, you know, pipette or an eyedropper, dropping 10 drops of Brett slurry in each bottle. It's something that you want to be careful with because Brettanomyces eats some of the carbs that Saccharomyces doesn't. So, you know, if you got too much residual sugars in there, you might get bottle bombs. I'm still deciding what to do with the Brett, but right now it's been less than a week since brewing, and the beer is still in the primary. So maybe you have some advice on whether I should put the Brett in the secondary or the bottle or your experiences with that. That'd be fun to hear from y'all. I brewed this beer no chill because at the time I brewed, it was chilly in northwest Arkansas. It wasn't 29 degrees below zero or colder as it was in other places, but I didn't want to deal with a frozen water hose, so I dug out my 6-gallon food-grade plastic no-chill container from the basement, and when I looked in it, I discovered it had a little mold in the bottom. Because the design of my container, the way the spigot is and the, you know, the opening, it makes it difficult to get all the moisture out. So I cleaned it well and sanitized it before running the hot wort into it. The day after, I racked the cooled wort into a glass carboy and pitched the yeast. So to avoid the mold problem, I cleaned the plastic container and put 2.5 gallons of star sand in there. Before I stored it in the basement. So that should take care of that. If you can't get rid of the liquid all the way, put some sanitizer in there. And I'm hoping that'll stabilize things. Of course, you know I brewed the golden ale on my electric brewing system from our sponsors Desiree and Dave of High Gravity in Tulsa. Even though the cold wind was blowing outside, it was easy to dial in the strike water temperature into the Warthog controller and let it work while I went on setting up the rest of my brew day. And then once I dove in, the system held my mash temperature rock solid at 148 degrees for the full 90 minutes. Now, that's something that I could not have done with my old cylindrical cooler mash tun, no matter how many blankets and quilts I wrapped around it. And dialing in the level of the strength of the boil was also a no-brainer. So, you know, I could dial in, I think it was 85% power into that Blickman boil coil and, you know, just had a nice rolling boil that I boiled for 60 minutes. Electric brewing takes the pain out of propane, and High Gravity has a wide selection of systems and controllers to take care of you. Single vessel, two vessel, three vessel systems from 5 gallons all the way up to 2 barrels. High Gravity has you covered. And they, at High Gravity, brew on a 1-barrel electric system with the Warthog controller for their Pippin's Tap Room, so it stands the real world the real world test. And by the way, my wife Susan and I are headed to Tulsa this weekend for a concert, so I'm looking forward to sampling some tasty beers at the Tap Room, and of course seeing Desiree and Dave and everybody at High Gravity in person. It's been too long, so head on over to highgravitybrew.com and use the code EBC75BB. To save $75 off your electric brewing purchase. That's highgravitybrew.com. Okay, you may remember Chris McKenzie from our conversation last year. Chris spent a whole year brewing only red IPAs to dial in his homebrew recipe. Well, Chris changed gears in the following year and switched to stout. And he asked other homebrewers to help him in another year-long project. Chris McKenzie, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hey, James. Thanks for having me back.
Now, the last time we talked, and it was almost a year ago at this very time, but the last time we talked, you had gotten through an experiment on your blog where you spent an entire year brewing red IPA and tweaking the recipe every time you brewed it. And so at the end of the process, you came out with a pretty good beer that you were fairly happy with, but you said at the ending of the interview that you were pretty sick of red IPAs. So the question is, have you brewed a red IPA since then?
Actually, recently I did for the first time. It took me about 10 months, but I finally came back to it, brewed yet another iteration.
So was your palate fatigue over, and how was this recipe?
It was. It is over. I've been brewing some maltier beer since then, and that helped. This recipe was, I think, better in some ways, and in some ways it still needs tweaking. So there we are.
Well, there you
Nothing's
go.
Nothing's ever finished.
Yeah, yeah. It gives you something to do. It gives you something to keep you busy. Well, you talked about it at the end of that interview as well, that you were going to start another experiment and this time bring in other folks to help you refine a recipe. And that's what we're here to talk about today. So bring us up to speed on what you've been doing over the past year.
Yeah, so 5 other brewers and I, we took a recipe and we kind of passed it along. I started it off and sent the recipe and a couple beers to the next brewer, and they tasted it without knowing the recipe, decided what aspects they wanted to change about it, and then took a look at the recipe and determined one, maybe two small things that they wanted to change about that recipe in order to achieve the change that they wanted from the recipe, and so on and so forth. And we did that and got 12 different beers out of it. This time I wanted to do this with other people so that it would be kind of a less insular, less navel-gazing type project, and hopefully learn a little bit about how other people approach recipe creation and how other people would maybe approach the same problem in a different way.
And you chose a stout as your target style. So what was it about stouts that you wanted to, that you like, or that you wanted to accentuate, or, you know, that you wanted to find the perfect recipe to frame?
I mean, I've always enjoyed a stout, so that sounded like a good, good style to, and a less hoppy one to give myself a little bit of a break from that last red IPA, project. Let's see. I've always liked the coffee and chocolate notes of stouts and the bitterness that came with it, but without too much of the hop character.
And how many people did you enlist? And do we know their names? Are they public?
We had Thomas, Matt, Mike, Roman, and Brad.
And these are, how did you find these guys?
I met them online through the blog, and kind of put it out there that I wanted to do this project, and was looking for people to do it with. I don't know a ton of brewers in my area. You know, the internet's a wonderful thing in terms of finding people who want to do some things that maybe people around you would not be interested in.
Yeah, in in many different areas of life. Or so I hear. So are these far flung from you, or some close by, or just, I guess it doesn't matter.
No, one of them is actually really close by me. And then the rest of us, most of us are on the eastern seaboard or thereabouts, and we did have one person out in Utah. So
how is this structured? I mean, how are you guys going to collaborate through the year?
Well, it started with me taking a recipe, and I bottled up a few beers from that batch and passed both the recipe and the beers along to the next brewer. And there was a lot of UPS involved in this.
And well, I guess you explained a little bit of it earlier. Once the next brewer in the line got your stout, he tasted it, made some notes, then looked at your recipe and said, "Ah, okay. Well, here's what I liked about the beer, and here's what I might have improved about the beer, and here's how I can improve the recipe for the next round." Is that about the way it went?
Yeah, that was the plan. It was kind of like a kind of a different game of telephone.
Yeah, that game that you might have played in grade school, where you get the whole class lined up and one person starts by whispering in another person's ear and they whisper in the next person's ear. And by the time it gets around to the whole room, it's completely different from what you started out with. Now, that may not necessarily be what you wanted with the stout. So how did you put some controls on this so that it wouldn't wind up to be like a Berliner Weiss by the end of it?
Well, we started off with the controls of, you know, one, it's going to be a stout. The other big control was that each brewer only made one and sometimes maybe two small changes instead of one change. But it was one change per iteration. So that kept it from getting out of hand. That kept it from one person changing everything about the recipe.
Now, it was that. How did that work out? Was it did it progress nicely down the line, or did some people find that it was too constricting, or how did that work?
There were a couple times where some people wanted to do more than one thing, and I understand that. But the goal was to kind of see how each individual change affected the beer. It was kind of the goal was kind of to learn together about the ingredients and what they did, and what they had to bring to the table and how they interacted with one another. And so that's a lot harder to do when, you know, you change two or three or five things.
Mm-hmm.
But it did get better each time. And the last beer, iteration 12 that came to me was pretty darn tasty. It was not a stout that I ever would have thought to brew myself in terms of its composition, but it was pretty darn good. And I think some of that was just due to the nature of each person only being able to change one thing. I think if we were given free rein, we would all probably tweak the last one that we did a little bit. But that said, it still ended up being a really, really good beer.
And the way it worked is that you, Chris, got to taste every single one of the rounds, right? And were you the only one that got to taste every single round?
Yeah, I was. That was the perk, free beer.
Yeah, if you want to start your own competition, you can do it the way you want to.
So in addition to each brewer sending the next person their recipe and their beer, they also sent me some beers as well, so that I could do a side-by-side of the last two iterations, and that they also could do a side-by-side of their two iterations.
And all the recipes were listed on the blog as you went along, so that if anyone in the chain wanted to try any of those themselves and brew those themselves, they could have done that along the way, too.
Yes, yeah. All the recipes are on each post throughout, and at the bottom of each post there's a chart of how it progressed, so that you can kind of easily see the changes that were made without having to flip back and forth.
And that's at brewublog.com, brewublog.com/stout to go straight to that post. And I'll post a link to that in the description of this episode on basicbrewingradio.com. How many whacks did you get to do? I mean, there are six of you, how many times did it go around?
It made its rounds twice. There were 12 beers, six of us, and so each of us brewed twice, except for coming to the end of it. Myself and the other brewer that was local to me, we brewed one additional beer.
Yeah, no, we'll talk about that a little bit later. I don't want to get too much into spoilers, but there was some, as with, I mean, you guys did really well in looking at these blog posts for dealing with, you know, it wasn't a huge number of folks, but whenever you multiply, you know, or add someone to a group who's supposed to be doing a single thing together, you add a level of complexity with each person added. So I think you did pretty well at getting the beers circulated as much as you can. But there was, you talk about UPS, there was a certain snafu at some point that kind of disrupted the chain. And we could talk about that in a little bit. But what I want to do is start with your recipe. Since you were the originator, you brewed iteration number one. What did your recipe look like? What did it start out like?
I started off with, and I've got pounds. I don't have metric, but I'll give percents as well. So that'll maybe that can translate.
Yeah.
I did 8 pounds or 80% of two row, 1 pound or 10% of victory, half a pound or 5% of roasted barley, and half a pound or 5% of Carafa 3. That was the grain bill mashed at 155 and boiled for an hour, 1 ounce of nuggets at 60 minutes, and that was 13.3% alpha acids. I don't have the IBUs on that in front of me right now. 1 ounce of Willamette at 5 minutes, and that was 5.1% alpha acids. Pitched US05, had an OG of 1054, an FG of 1010, with a final ABV of 5.8%.
So what was your impression of that first brew?
I thought that itself was pretty good, which was a much better starting place than I had for the red IPA recipe. so I was curious to see how it would go, because I was pretty pleased with that. Had I been just doing a one-off, I might have just brewed that the next time I brewed a stout, and it never would have improved. But I enjoyed it thoroughly. I remember it had some kind of cold brew coffee notes, a little bit of dark chocolate, a little bit of earthiness, and had some toast in there from the victory.
Now you had to take your precious beer that you liked so well, and you had to pass it on to the next one in the chain. And part of the process, you know, was to let that next guy taste the beer, post notes, you know, on that beer, you know, before looking at the recipe and then brewing his own version. So was there a little bit of, you know, letting go of the ego between the brewers, you know, to make this work well?
Yeah, I think in some instances there definitely was. You know, we each have our own reasons for doing things, and if somebody else does not like that as much as you do, or if perhaps, you know, the change that you made didn't work out like you expected it to.
It can be challenging, right? I mean, you have to develop a thick skin, and you have to take criticism. At the same time, you have to be able to give constructive criticism in an encouraging way, and not, you know, just tear something down. You know, so it's a two way street.
Yeah,
there
definitely, because you know we didn't. Yeah, and each brewer, you know, gave their impressions of their beer, and then they passed it on to me and the next person, and we gave our impressions of the beer. Actually, a lot of times those lined up, so that was. I have to say that the guys that I have been working with on this project have been just great, and I think that everybody's palate was pretty close on this, which says a lot about how these beers actually turned out, I think.
Mm-hmm. And so, how did the beers first start evolving? What was the section of the recipe that, you know, each participant seemed to be honing in on first? What was the first target?
Oh, it was definitely the malt. It was the malt for the first five iterations. I think it took till the sixth version before somebody made a change that was not malt.
And how did those changes start to happen?
Okay, so the Carafa 3 that I had in mind got replaced one-to-one with chocolate malts. The next version around just switched the, didn't change any of the malts, but it changed the percentages amongst the malts. The next version added flaked barley to the mix, which I had to say added a lot to the beer. The next version also switched around some of the percentages of those same malts.
And we have to say also that that there were detailed brewing notes from each brew session with photographs and all that. you know, from iteration to iteration. And, you know, you guys have different brewing systems. So I guess, you know, that that enters another big variable into the equation as well. You know, if you brew in a bag one version and, you know, a three vessel system or whatever, you know, between the brewers, if there are different systems, did you find that entered in too big of a variable, or did that not seem to make a difference?
I don't think it made as much of a difference as it could have, because as I said earlier, the guys I was working with were great, all skilled brewers, and you know, there was a couple instances where, you know, the OGs didn't quite match. I think there was maybe two instances where the OG was just kind of out of the realm of one or two points different than it would than target. But outside of that, everyone was able to adjust to their system. We worked with percentages and IBUs instead of poundages and ounces of hops, so that everyone could adjust to their system. And, you know, I could definitely tell the difference between each beer, and some of that I'm sure had to do with the fact that, you know, two brewers brewing the same beer on different systems are going to produce a slightly different beer. That's just going to be a function of this. Mm-hmm. But that said, some of the ones that didn't have too much different were very similar, even though I could tell the difference and tell the improvement that was made.
Now, the it was several iterations in before someone changed the yeast from US 05 to something that's more, you know, English or more stout specific, right?
Yeah. Iteration 6, the yeast got changed to WLP 004, which is Irish ale yeast. Mm. And I have to say that was a great change. I don't think after this I will ever use US 05 for a stout again. Because the difference was just incredibly pronounced. I thought that the beers up until that point were really good, and then once I reached once we reached iteration 6 and the beer was being made with the Irish ale yeast, it was just so much smoother. There was like this harshness that US 05 was, I don't know, maybe not giving, but allowing to happen or accentuating. That the Irish ale yeast just worked with that stout grain bill, and it was just suddenly much smoother.
Huh. And you tried another yeast, at least one more yeast as well, right?
Yeah. Y yeast 1450. Denny's favorite 50 is that one. And that one, you know, that one was also, it also did not have that harsh character that US 05 was letting come through. So I don't know what would cause that, but it was a definite change when we switched from US 05 to other yeasts.
And how did the hops fare through the whole thing? Did your original hop balance or formulation seem to fare pretty well?
Yeah, it stayed pretty close. The hops didn't get changed at all until iteration 7, which was my second time brewing. And then it didn't change after that. The Willamette at 5 minutes got switched out for Centennial.
And at some point during the process, did you see the changes become more tweaks than radical departures from the previous recipe?
Yeah, there was definitely a point where the beer just got really good, and at that point it was really hard to kind of figure out what was an actual improvement and what was personal taste. But we carried on, and you know, I do think it actually, I, in my opinion, I think it improved every time.
Wow. So the original goal of the project was to brew 12 iterations and then submit that to a competition to be judged. So how did that go?
Well, I was hoping to get iteration 12 back to me in time for me to taste it and make one more tweak and submit iteration 13 to the local competition that happens every year around December in my area. And, well, one of the, I think it was iteration 6, that just did not fare well with shipment. It made it all the way to my state from across the country and made it very close to my city. And then I just didn't see any movement on the shipping tracker for a couple days. And then it was listed as a damaged box or a damaged package. And so I guess some bottles broke. Mm. So that kind of set us back in our original time frame. And so what I did instead, I had 6 more iterations to think about it. So what I did instead is I talked to the other brewer that was local to me, and I said, hey, do you want to take your last version that you brewed, make whatever tweaks you would have made if you had free reign with that recipe, and submit that to a competition and compete against each other and see how we do? And he was all for it. And so I took iteration 7 and he took iteration 8, and which were the last ones that we brewed respectively, and made one or two changes to our last recipe. I refer to those as iterations 7.1 and 8.1 because they didn't really fall into this progression.
Right.
And so we submitted those to the same competition, and it's funny, they actually ended up next to each other on the table. If you looking at the flight positions, they were directly next to each other on the table, which was funny. And we took first and second place.
Wow. So who took first?
I took second.
Okay.
I took second. and the other brewer took first. So.
And who's the other brewer?
Thomas. He took first.
Congratulations, Thomas. That's pretty good. And what were your scores?
We both had an overall score of 41.
Wow. I'd say that's pretty good. And that's only iteration 7 and 8. So you think the following iterations from the collaboration got better even than those?
I think then iteration 7 and 8, yes. We made slight tweaks to our last brews, so they weren't exactly iteration 7 and 8. They were a little different than that.
But did iterations 9, 10, 11, and 12, were they better than your two winning beers?
Well, I can't say for certain because I have to go off on memory on that. I didn't get a chance to taste those side by side.
Okay.
And I hesitate to do that because I memory's a flawed thing when it comes to your perception of something that you're not tasting at that moment.
Well, sure. But one must think that if the collaboration process worked as well as it did to get to those beers that did so well, maybe iteration number 12, would blow the other two away in a competition. But I guess we'll never know.
It might have. I don't know.
So I take it that you're pleased with the results of this collaboration.
I was very happy with it. you know, I said it earlier and I'll say it again. The guys I was brewing with were just awesome. They had great ideas throughout, and you know, were very willing to let me step in and say no when I needed to kind of keep things on track. And you know, this only worked out because of them, and because that they were such good brewers with good ideas and good perception of the ingredients and how to deal with these recipes.
You know, they say sometimes they say that a camel is a horse that's designed by committee. You know, so sometimes, you know, groups of people come out with things that are less than optimal, but it sounds like you guys were on track.
So, yeah, I would say so.
So what's next? Do you have another collaborative experiment going?
Yeah, so we have started, and there hasn't been posted yet. That's coming soon. Or maybe is out there by the time this airs. But this next on the agenda is a project I'm calling Limitations. And it, instead of you know, brewing one style, one recipe, and going from there, which will still happen on the blog, I'm still going to be doing that some. What is next with these collaborations with these guys is, And you know, these guys are coming back to continue doing things with me on this, so I'm pretty pleased about that. The project is going to focus on limiting ourselves to a set number of ingredients to kind of push our creativity and how we approach recipe creation. It's something that we see in other disciplines, that if you have limited yourself, kind of confined yourself to a particular set of things and don't allow yourself to go outside of them, but you have a goal in mind, you maybe have to be more creative to use the things that are in front of you, and use them maybe in a different way to achieve the same goal. So what we're going to do is we have chosen three malts, two hops, and two yeast to choose from. We're going to brew several times each, and each brewer has to use all three malts, both hops, but then they can pick which yeast they want to use. And we're going to go from there and see what comes of it. We're going to try also, we're letting each other know what styles we're doing, and kind of keeping in touch with recipes and whatnot. Throughout the process, so that nobody is, so that we don't end up with, you know, 18 IPAs. that wouldn't be interesting.
But likely.
Yeah. It's, yeah. So we're going that direction, and we're going to see what comes of it and see how many different beers and how many different styles of beer we can create with just this limited set of ingredients.
Huh. And will anybody get to taste these beers besides you?
I think everyone was a little happy that I was willing to say, let's do this and not ship anything this time. So we're going to pause on that. That can get a little heavy on the wallet. So.
Yes, definitely. Especially if you have to ship things twice because they get dropped off the truck.
And that was the most expensive shipment, too, across the country.
Of course. Of course it was. Well, cool. Well, that sounds like fun. I hope that it works out well, and I hope that you'll want to come back on and talk about how you guys did.
Yeah, I'd be glad to.
All right, Chris. Well, congratulations to you and to everybody else involved, and good luck and happy brewing on 2019.
All right, thanks, James.
Well, thanks again to Chris and all the other brewers who participated in the project. Be sure to check out brewublog.com/stout to see all the details. And there are tons of details. And I'm looking forward to hearing about the next round of experiments. Sounds like fun. In the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Thanks, everybody, supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies always coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. Get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo, and you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store, too. You can find our logbooks where you can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Check all those out at basicbrewingshop.com. Also, take a look at our silicone pints while you're there. It's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.